In January 2017, Lebratus, an AI-enhanced software program, defeated four professional poker players over 120,000 hands of poker play. This was the latest conquest of top humans by software in Apex strategy games, following on the heels of Deep Blue's 1997 victory over Garry Kasparov and AlphaGo's 2016 win against Lee Sedol. Our guest this episode is Noam Brown, a co-creator of Lebratus. He's going to take us on a deep dive into how Lebratus beat the human professionals and, crucial to our first season of Creative Next, how Lebratus learned. My name is Dirk Niemeyer, a social futurist interested in systems that will make the quality of our lives better. My co-host is Jonathan Follett, a writer, composer, and emerging tech researcher. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 5 of Creative Next, a show about future-proofing creatives in a world of AI automation. Let's get started. Poker seems like a quintessentially human game. Not only is it a strategy game that calls on our raw intelligence, it also requires softer skills like reading other players, bluffing against the odds, and imposing your will in psychological ways. Whereas strategy games like chess and Go are perfect information games, where it makes sense for machine intelligence to brute force its way past, poker combines simple math and percentages with a variety of perceptive skills that seem uniquely human. Or, at least we thought. As it turns out, those soft human skills may not matter. As we're going to learn in this episode, Lebratus crushed poker pros by completely ignoring them as individuals. Like the Bobby Fischer quote from our last episode, the computer didn't consider the psychology that is so core to some human professionals' theory of the game and just played good moves. The sciences are in a golden age. For example, in neuroscience, we've learned more in the last decade than in all of previous human history combined. And as it turns out, the more science shows us, the more humanity looks different than it used to. AI and big data are no different. As different contexts are optimized or automated, we begin to understand that what we think of as creativity can be replicated by machines, that the ways to win games generally come back to math, not human discretion, and that even things as core to our concept of humanity like free will seem more and more illusory. As our myths of ignorance are exposed by the light of knowledge, even more is called into question. In the decades, never mind the centuries ahead, our notion of being human will likely undergo a radical rethinking thanks to the discoveries of science and the achievements of thinking machines, like Lebratus. Noam Brown is researching game theory and reinforcement learning at Carnegie Mellon University and is the co-creator of Lebratus. He's going to take us deep into the heart of it, starting with challenges offered by the game of poker itself.
AIs have traditionally been very successful in dealing with perfect information games like chess or Go, where both players know exactly what's going on at all times. In a game of Go or a game of chess, all the information that you need is available to you to make a decision. But in a game like poker, there's hidden information. You don't know what cards your opponent is holding, and so you always have to act with this uncertainty about what their strategy is or what situation you're in. And this is particularly challenging for AI. It makes things way more difficult. It makes it way harder to compute a strategy. And so for a long time, researchers in AI just sort of ignored the issue. And they focused on these perfect information games like chess and Go and just, you know, sort of pretended that problems like poker didn't exist really, which is really unsatisfying. And so there were some of us, and myself included, that thought this was a problem that we should address, because the truth is most real-world situations involve hidden information. You know, you can make an AI that plays chess, but it's not going to be that useful in the real world if there's hidden information involved. And we really took a very different approach that's used, you know, compared to the AIs that are used for perfect information games. We did something that's very different and ultimately was successful. And I think that particularly after AlphaGo and, you know, the success that AI has had recently with perfect information games, the fact that those techniques could not be used in imperfect information games, hidden information games like poker, really highlighted the importance of our research and highlighted the importance of our accomplishment in beating humans at poker. As researchers, our focus is not to develop an AI for poker. Our focus is to develop an AI that can handle hidden information. And we use poker as a testbed, as a sort of a way to benchmark our progress. But it's not the goal. So we view beating top humans in poker as sort of like a milestone in showing how far we've come in being able to handle hidden information, not the achievements that we were aiming for in the first place. So we don't use techniques that are specific to poker. We don't, for example, tell the bots to bluff with a certain percentage or say that with these cards you should raise and with these cards you should fold. We're developing a way for the AI to determine its strategy on its own.
Libratus, like AlphaGo before it, is driven by machine learning, where the software is composing its own notion of strategy and play as opposed to being directed by a human.
The way that it does this is through self-play. It's actually very similar to how humans learn how to play a game. You learn from experience. So the AI starts by knowing nothing about the game, and it plays totally randomly, and it plays itself, it plays a copy of itself in that game for trillions of iterations, trillions of hands of poker, for example. And as it plays, it learns from experience that, you know, if it was in a particular situation and it raised and it lost money, well, could it have gotten more money if it had folded instead? So after the hand is over, it will review its decisions and it will say at each decision point, what would have happened if I had taken some other action instead? You know, if I had raised instead of called, would I have gotten more money? And if the answer is yes, then it will have regret on that action. It will regret having not taken that action. And if it's in that, if it finds itself in that decision point later on or a similar decision point, then it will take that action that it regrets with higher probability. And in truth, this is actually, you know, very similar to how humans learn. You know, if you've ever played poker with some humans, then you'll know it's very common for a person to ask, okay, well, what would have happened if I had raised instead? Would you have called me? And that's exactly what the bot is doing. It's asking that hypothetical question of what would have happened if I had done this other thing instead. And it's able to get an answer because it's playing against a copy of itself. And so it can ask itself that question and it can give itself an answer.
Trillions of hands. It is a quantifiable reminder of the advantage AI today has in understanding something compared to humans. Yes, sure, we have our own advantages, such as broader context and more varied tool sets. But at some point, the ability to practice trillions of times is an incredible edge to the machine.
These algorithms are trying to find what's called the Nash equilibrium. It's trying to find a perfect strategy. Now, a Nash equilibrium is proven to exist in any game. And in particular, in two-player zero-sum games, if you're playing according to the Nash equilibrium strategy, then you are guaranteed to not lose an expectation no matter what your opponent does. And this is what the AI is trying to find. It's not trying to adapt to its opponent. It's trying to find this Nash equilibrium strategy and play according to it because it knows that if it's playing this Nash equilibrium, then no matter what its opponent does, it's not going to lose. I think the idea that Nash equilibrium exists, the idea that this perfect strategy exists in poker is surprising to a lot of people. But if you think about it for a bit, it's really, you know, you can see this in smaller games. So for example, in rock, paper, scissors, we all know what the Nash equilibrium strategy is. It's to throw rock, paper, and scissors with 1/3 probability each. And if you were to do that, if you were to just play that strategy, then no matter what your opponent does, you're going to not lose an expectation. Now, in the case of rock, paper, scissors, you're not going to win an expectation either. You're just going to tie an expectation. But in a complicated game like poker, if you are able to play the Nash equilibrium strategy, then it's likely your opponent will make mistakes. And by playing the Nash equilibrium strategy, you will, in practice, win because you're playing the perfect strategy. So we're not trying to adapt to the opponent. In fact, during the competition, we never looked at the cards the opponent had, for example. We never cared which player we were playing against. We were always playing the same exact strategy no matter who the opponent was.
For the Nash equilibrium strategy to work, though, you need a human. There's a saying in poker that if you look around the table and can't pick out the sucker, then it is probably you. In a world of AI poker players, the humans are the suckers because no matter how hard we try, we will never achieve perfect Nash equilibrium. Machines, however, can. Even more than that, if playing one another, they can shift in real time as the play of the other agents, and thus the equilibrium itself, are changing. Let's learn more about how Gnome and the machines make this happen.
Now, the first component is what I just described, is trying to estimate this Nash equilibrium. Now, we're not finding a perfect Nash equilibrium through this self-play, but we're getting a rough approximation of what the Nash equilibrium would be. And we're doing that offline before the competition ever begins. And so we come into the competition with a strategy that the AI thinks is pretty strong. But it's not perfect. And so actually what it does is during the competition, if it finds itself in a particular situation, when it's actually playing against a human in a particular hand of poker, and it's on, you know, the third betting round, for example, it will compute in real time a closer approximation to the Nash equilibrium for the situation that it's in at that moment. So it'll take, you know, like, you know, 20 seconds to figure out, okay, well, let me find a much better strategy for this particular situation but that fits within this overarching blueprint strategy that I've computed for the entire game as a whole. So that's the second component. And I think that was actually the big breakthrough with Libratus. It wasn't really, nobody had really found an effective way of doing real-time equilibrium computation in imperfect information games before. But of course, you know, with chess AIs and Go AIs, thinking in real time, that's a big part of those AIs. And it's kind of surprising in retrospect that people didn't really focus on this earlier in imperfect information games. Now, the third component, which is what you described, is this idea that it was, I would say, in some sense, learning from the opponents. Now, I want to make it clear, it was not adapting to the opponents. It was not trying to exploit the opponents in any way. What happened is, because the AI is not perfect, it's not computing a perfect Nash equilibrium, there are some parts in the game tree, there are some different, you know, situations where it's playing suboptimally. And that's a problem because, you know, if it's playing suboptimally, then there's opportunities for the humans to exploit it in those situations. And that's what the humans were constantly trying to do. Every single day, they were trying to find out where are these weaknesses that we could take advantage of this AI. So at the end of each day, the AI would review the situations that it was finding itself in most frequently. It was trying to find the situations where the humans were not necessarily successfully, but at least trying to exploit it. And it would come up with a much better strategy, a much closer approximation of the Nash equilibrium for those particular situations that the humans were focusing on. And then the next day, it would have a much better strategy in those situations, so it would be far less exploitable for those points. And so this led to a sort of cat and mouse kind of game, because every day the humans would try to find a weakness and take advantage of it, and at the end of each day, the AI would fix those weaknesses in preparation for the next day. And so as the competition progressed, these holes that were in the AI shrunk and got smaller and smaller over time, and the humans had even less opportunity to exploit the AI.
And this is only the first, the least sophisticated AI to defeat poker pros, and on its maiden voyage at that. Regardless, it only sharpened its edge as it moved forward in real time. Because it learned its own way, unlike how any human could even possibly have learned, it enjoyed some positive unintended consequences, reimagining the games in ways similar to the chess engines we discussed last episode with Christopher Chabris.
One of the really cool things about Libratus is that because it was trained from self-play, from playing against a copy of itself starting from scratch without knowing anything about the game, it never looked at human data, and it came with a much a very different strategy compared to how humans play. And so when it started the match, you know, the human said it was like playing an alien. You know, it was like playing somebody who had learned to play poker on Mars. And some of the cool things that it did were, for example, it was using, I think the best example is it was using bet sizes that were very different from human convention. So in the human poker world, you typically bet a fraction of the pot, and that fraction of the pot is about 0.5 times the pot to 1 times the pot. So if there is $300 in the pot, then you might bet $150, and you might bet $300, and maybe in some really rare circumstances, you might bet like $500 at most. But the AI didn't feel a need to constrain its bets to those amounts, and it would sometimes bet 3 times the pot, 5 times the pot, sometimes even 20 times the pot. So it would have no problem putting $20,000 into a $200 pot. And this was a big shock to the humans. It was very frustrating for them in particular, because they could be in a situation where they have a really, really strong hand, maybe the second best hand that's possible. And then suddenly the bot bets $20,000 into a $500 pot. And the bot's basically saying, oh, I'm either bluffing or I have the best hand. And so this human who's sitting there with the second best hand now has to think for a really long time, you know, is he really going to lay down the second best hand that's possible just because the AI is saying that he has something better? And you could see the human sometimes taking 5 or 10 minutes to make a decision. And it was very frustrating for them. It was very satisfying for me. But, you know, I could understand the frustration in those moments. So that was one difference. I think also a big difference, you know, it was bluffing. It learned to bluff, of course, because you have to bluff to be to play poker well. But the situations that it chose to bluff in were pretty different. I mean, in some situations were pretty different from what humans would do. And this was something that, you know, I'm not a very advanced poker player, but I have a pretty decent idea of how to play the game. And actually, when we were developing the AI, I would look at the hands that it was playing and try to get a sense of, if you know, how well was it doing. And I would see these really weird situations where it would bluff with hands that didn't make any sense to me. And so, you know, I actually called up my friend who's a better poker player. He plays professionally. And I said, you know, is this a smart move? Can you tell me, like, if this is this something that a human would do? And he looked at the hand and he said, you have a bug in your program. Like, there's no way that it should be bluffing with that in that situation. So I looked at the code and I realized the code looks totally fine. So we called up an even better poker player, one of the best in the world. And we asked him, you know, in your opinion, is this a smart thing to do? And he said, okay, well, this is not something that I would do, but let me take some time to think about it. And he came back the next day and he said, you know, I thought about it. I crunched the numbers and this is not something that any human would ever do, but it's actually a brilliant move. And he said, this bot is thinking two moves ahead of any human. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of behavior that we saw with his AI. It's just, you know, really light years ahead of anything a human would do. And in fact, the humans that we played against, they told us that they were going to take some of these strategies and start using it in their own play. In particular, these big overbets, betting huge amounts of the pot in some situations. They said that that's something they're going to do in the future when they play against humans.
The Labrados team's goal was not to make a poker-playing AI. It was to make an AI engine that was able to succeed in a variety of contexts using poker as an initial testbed. Noam shares a bit more about what the Labrados team has planned.
The techniques that we're developing are not specific to poker, and they're applicable to any imperfect information game. Financial markets are one example of that. Financial markets are an imperfect information game. So are negotiations, so are auctions, so are military situations. So we see a lot of potential for applying these techniques to other domains in the future. Now, we're not specifically looking at financial markets right now, but I think that down the road, that is potentially something that we will look into, and I think that it's going to have a huge impact. You know, everybody would love to see an AI. Well, I mean, some people, people would love to own an AI that can trade in financial markets and you know, do that well. So there's a lot of interest in this, but I think that there are steps that need to be taken to get to that point. So I wouldn't say it's going to happen within 3 years, but maybe 10 years from now, we will see this being used in financial markets. There are some challenges in extending to things like negotiations and financial markets. And I see two main issues. One is when you are dealing with a zero-sum game, which is poker is a zero-sum game. You know, any money that you're winning, you are taking from somebody else. Those games have nice properties that make it easier to compute an equilibrium solution. But the real world isn't necessarily like that. I mean, maybe military situations are like that. But if you're dealing with a negotiation, for example, you have win-win outcomes. It's not zero sum. That's important to understand. It's important that to understand that you and your adversary can both win in this game. And the techniques that are needed are a little bit different from the zero sum setting. So figuring out how to adapt the techniques that we have to this general sum setting, that is one of the things that we're looking at in the short term. And I think that's the smaller obstacle to overcome. The bigger obstacle is that when you're moving from a game to the real world, your strategies and your payoffs are not well defined. In poker, it's very clear what actions you can take in any given situation, mm-hmm. and it's very clear what the payoffs are for those actions. You win a certain amount of money at the end of the hand. But if you move to a negotiation, for example, it's not your actions are not as clearly defined. You can negotiate over all sorts of things, and that might not be well defined at the start. And the payoffs are also not as well defined. How do you value certain outcomes? In financial markets, for example, you might even think that it's clearly defined, that it's just dollar value, but that's not necessarily the case, actually. It could be risk. It could be you know, maybe you value short-term liquidity, you value, you know, selling an asset in the short term in order to have cash on hand.
The win-win scenarios Noam is talking about require context, and perhaps a lot of it, to solve successfully. So far, AI is awful at context. It uses data in ways we are incapable of, but is unable to apply broader context, much less more nuanced aspects of personality. For example, say you are creating an AI to master win-win negotiations with a specific human person. Let's say that human person is the current president of the United States, a self-styled expert negotiator. How does the machine understand his unique psychology? Because sometimes it's not really about getting the best deal. Sometimes it's about not being embarrassed, or about getting your way on a self-destructive issue. The methods Labrados used to beat poker won't work in that context, at least not yet or even anytime soon. It'll be interesting to see what the Labrados team and others working on the problem do to solve it. As he is an AI expert, we are particularly interested in Noam's take on how AI will be impacting different jobs in the years ahead.
You know, we've seen AI developing in a lot of domains in recent years, and the pace of progress has really been astonishing in the past 5 years or so. And I think there are legitimate concerns that AI is going to be replacing a number of jobs in the near future. So in particular, driving, for example, truck driving is a huge industry, a huge occupation, taxi driving, that's all going to go away. And I think that the consensus is pretty clear that that is the first major job to be eliminated, which I don't think people are too upset about. I mean, honestly, nobody really wants to be a taxi driver, right? I'd imagine. In the longer term, I think it's also important to understand that there's limitations to what AI can do. And I think that those limitations are being overcome every year to some extent, but there are some that are just so far off, it's unimaginable to imagine AI, for example, writing a novel. I don't think that AIs will ever, or at least not in the next, in my lifetime perhaps, have the understanding or the creativity to be able to write a prize-winning novel.
That's an interesting comment though, Noam, because there actually are AIs that are currently being competitive in novel writing competitions in Japan specifically, in fact.
I would be skeptical of, also I would say that when you see these articles about AIs, you know, doing all these incredible things, be a little skeptical. I have not heard about this, and I'd be very surprised. I'd be very surprised if there was actually an AI that could write a competent novel. I've seen AIs, you know, writing really short passages that, you know, if you don't look too closely, then sometimes they make sense. But it's really just imitating what a human would do. When you're dealing with a short passage, then it's much easier to sort of fake it. You can't get an AI to write Harry Potter, and that's not going to happen anytime soon. So I think that things that rely on verbal skills, on a understanding of the world, that is going to take a long time to replace. And I think also the things that involve human interaction. So for example, daycare, you're not going to see an AI taking care of kids anytime soon. And I don't think that's going to change.
Noam covers a lot of ground here. It does appear that driving jobs are on the front line of obsolescence. On the other hand, as we're going to talk about during season two, AI original writing and even novel writing are a lot further along than Noam may realize. On the other hand, for all of us parents, he's sadly on point that AI-powered childcare won't be coming anytime soon.
This is something that people always get wrong. You know, like everybody always has this notion of what is hard for an AI and what is easy for a human. And that always changes. For example, people thought 50 years ago, if you can make an AI that could play chess, that is really an accomplishment. And you know, it's a sign that AIs will be stronger than humans at everything, right? Like maybe playing chess is really the epitome of human intelligence. And we see that, you know, you can make an AI that can play chess and it can't do a lot of other things. And people might have thought that, playing poker, you know, being able to bluff, that is something that is uniquely human and a sign of human intuition and being able to read your opponent. And that's something that if an AI were ever able to do that, then it would really be the sign of the robot apocalypse. You know, the AI is doing everything. And now we've seen that, you know, an AI can bluff and, you know, it certainly there's, that means that it can do a lot of things now, but they're also, it can't do everything. So I think that to try to say, I'm saying that now, you know, an AI can't write a prize-winning novel, and if it ever did that, I'd be very terrified. You know, I'm thinking back to those people 50 years ago that said, well, if an AI could ever play chess, then it's the end of the world. Maybe I could be wrong, and it could be the case that an AI could write a prize-winning novel, and it won't mean anything. It's kind of hard to quantify. You know, it's kind of hard to say, like, what is it that makes certain tasks harder, what makes certain tasks easier, and anything that I said, it could be wrong.
Thanks again to researcher Noam Brown. So, John, how did our interview with Noam impact your thinking about the work we are doing with Creative Next?
I think one portion of our conversation with Noam really impacted, you know, my thinking about Creative Next, and that was his discussion around sort of the perfect versus imperfect information games. And so In imperfect information games, as we know, you know, you're not aware of all the information that the other player might have. like poker, which is, you know, sort of the subject of Noam's work. So in a larger sense, there's a really sort of broader real world imperfect information game that we're playing with deploying emerging technologies like artificial intelligence. So, you know, ultimately we know a few things about how it's going to act and be acted upon in the world, but we're unleashing technology into the world where the consequences and sort of the scenarios aren't completely understood. But we do know that in the past, when powerful technologies have been unleashed, there have been substantial consequences that were unanticipated and sort of detrimental, right? Thinking specifically around automotive, the combustion engine, et cetera. So as I'm thinking about AI cranking away at imperfect information games, I started thinking maybe that one of the tools that AI can bring to the world of Creative Next really is in providing a sounding board for what the consequences of its own actions may be. And this is already sort of in play when we talk about adversarial networks, right? So you have one AI trying to create, say, a set of photographs that will fool software into thinking they're human beings, right? And you have another AI that's trying to detect whether the photograph is faked. And so it's interesting that to me that AI actually may have incorporated sort of within the technology itself, there might be some answers in terms of anticipating some of these unintended consequences that we're so concerned mm-hmm. about. So that's part of what Noam's interview sort of got me thinking about, and I thought that was a pretty interesting idea, and so I was really happy to hear Noam talk about those items.
Yeah, you know, something you and I have talked about a lot over the months and years, especially when we're talking about our frustrations with the public's misunderstanding of AI, is the fact that it is really weak and narrow right now. I mean, even in the most impressive applications. And hearing Noam talk about Libratus, what it reminded me of, or not even reminded me, what it really made me think about that I don't think about nearly as frequently, is the fact that there are people out there trying to make engines that go more broadly than that. Like, I just sort of out of hand dismiss strong AI, and strong AI is a long way away either way. But in between weak and strong as like the bipolar things, there are attempts to make to make technology that is more flexible than just the super weak and narrow AI that we're familiar with and that we're going to be benefiting from some time. So I think that's useful to keep in mind as we're thinking about AI automation and where all of this is going in the future.
Right. Yeah. The idea that Libratus could be repurposed for negotiation, say. And sort of that broader application. Certainly, there's hints of that as well when we're talking about a service like IBM Watson, right?
That's right.
They're trying to repurpose their AI for a variety of verticals. So, but to your point, that's something to keep an eye on and to think about.
And what did Noam say that was the biggest surprise or new kernel of knowledge for you?
Yeah, I think his description of how Libratus evolved during the game, during the competition, really stood out to me because it's this idea that the computer never sleeps, right? So the poker players at the end of the day would, I don't know, presumably go get dinner and drinks and call it a night. But the AI is cranking away at the things that you know, the weaknesses that were potentially exploited by the human players during the day, and was more or less shoring up those weaknesses, you know, throughout whatever the processing time was overnight. Whereas human beings, you know, are also sort of thinking about these things, I'm sure, and strategizing and sleeping and all these things. But it's this continuous evolution in real time, this evolution and change that really stuck out to me, because ultimately human beings are not going to remain that focused on a particular set of tasks, you know, just continually and forever, no matter how focused you are. Mm-hmm. And that sort of that power to adapt, even, you know, within the confines of the tournament was something that maybe I'd never, you know, considered before. So that really, really popped for me in that conversation.
Yeah, definitely. For me too. But you know, the thing that sort of surprised me the most was I was shocked by Noam's take on AI and writing, because you and I have done a lot of research into it. And in fact, season two, we're going to be talking a lot about AI and writing. And AIs are writing novels already. They're pretty bad. They're not going to win big prizes. But you can see it, probably not years, probably it's more decades, on the lower side of decades, though. Computers, AI will be writing award-winning novels. Like, you can just see the straight line from here to there. And so it's really a reminder that even someone like Noam, who, you know, one of the co-creators of the AI that defeated top poker pros, like, total AI expert, I mean, big time. And yet, in this other domain of how AI can operate, which is a little bit different than in poker with its sort of brute force, computational, you know, game theory optimal approach, other interesting things are being done. But those are things that Noam doubts it could do. And even, you know, even was saying, like, wow, it'd be, you know, I don't know that he used these words, but it was like, you know, it'd be like the end of the world as we know it if AI could do that. And it's on the way to doing that. So it's, you know, just a reminder of how big the world is and all the different things AI can be doing. And even when you have experts, really smart people like Noam, aren't necessarily aware of what are happening in other things and have a distorted appreciation for what might even be possible in those other areas. That really surprised me.
The we're going to devote a whole season to it, so we're not going to get into it now. But yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on sort of the intermediate steps between, you know, what we have now and, you know, there being a bunch of AI writers on the New York Times bestseller list. There's going to be a lot of interesting steps in between.
And you know, the other part of it too is, and I certainly wouldn't call myself an expert in any of these things, but if Noam can have a blind spot in that way, in something that would seem so seem like something that he might have a better sense of, what the heck am I blind about? Like, I'm just waiting during all of this research to crash into things that are shocking me, which I guess will be more fun than anything else, right?
Yes, for sure.
So, John, what did you learn from Noam that has influenced your life and how you're living today?
Yeah, so you know, as Noam was discussing sort of moving Labrotis from the world of gaming in poker to the sort of real world negotiations, he outlined a number of sort of changes in terms of different considerations and scenarios that come up in the real world that are just not as familiar in you know, sort of the gaming world. And it, you know, one in particular around negotiation is that there are still sort of the possibility for these zero-sum games where someone wins the negotiation and someone loses. But more often than not, both you want a win-win scenario, right? You want both people walking away from the negotiation, whether it's, you know, around a business deal or what have you. Everybody wants to win. I mean, or at least felt like they got something out of it. And the strategies and payoffs in these scenarios are not as well defined as in the world of games. So with that as, you know, sort of the preamble, it's making me think more about what we want the payoff to be from artificial intelligence. Like, what is it that we want AI to do for us, for our society? Because as much as the sort of strategies and payoffs are not defined completely for negotiation, we have the opportunity now to sort of define what the payoffs are going to be. So before we, or as we're unleashing AI into the world, I think it's worth having the types of conversations you and I are having, and sort of more broadly with our, you know, our friends and listeners. You know, what is the payoff that we want? And how do we want to use AI to shape our businesses and our society? Because we're moving AI into the much more gray real world. And as we do it, we need to provide sort of the boundaries for it to play in. And I'd very much like those boundaries to be discussed rather than preemptively sort of determined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. The part that's influenced my life is a little more parochial. You know, I happen to have been a pretty active poker player, especially when I lived in California about a decade ago, going to the casinos out there, the Bay 101 and Garden City. Spent a lot of time doing that and was pretty serious at the time. And of course, still love poker, even though I rarely get to play it. But hearing about how the AI was playing and sort of the strategy and almost reimagining the game, it has really sort of brought me back into poker strategy and thinking about it for myself. And I don't expect to start playing as much as I did back then again, but I'm back studying the game and interested in what's going on, sort of the new theories, new strategies, and changing the way I play. So that's just a very, in a very real sense of the hours of my day, it's sort of, you know, reintroduced a new old activity, which is kind of fun.
Excellent.
Each episode, we're going to finish up with a thing to think about, one question germane to what's been covered on the show today. This episode's thing to think about is, what is something in your life that you wish you had an AI engine to help you with? Think about that for yourself and feel free to tweet at us about it at GoCreativeNext. Creative Next is sponsored by GoInvo, a design practice dedicated to innovation in healthcare whose clients are as varied as AstraZeneca, 3M Health Information Services, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Learn more at goinvo.com. We're also sponsored by Design Museum Foundation, a new kind of museum. They believe design can change the world. They're online, nomadic, and focused on making design accessible to everyone. Their mission, bring the transformative power of design everywhere. You can learn about their exhibitions, events, magazine, and more at designmuseumfoundation.org. Our final sponsor is BIF. As a purpose-driven firm, BIF is committed to bringing design strategy where it is needed most, healthcare, education, and public service, to create value for our most vulnerable populations. To learn more and connect, visit them at biff.is, that's biff.is. Please subscribe to Creative Next on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us at Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. You can get in touch with us at the Creative Next website, creativenext.org, or follow us on Twitter at GoCreativeNext. On Medium, we are partnered with Towards Data Science, where we publish an article to extend and build upon each episode. Check out all that Towards Data Science has to offer at towardsdatascience.com. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, whom you can reach at dNiemeyer. That's dKnemeyer. And my partner in crime is Jonathan Follett, who is at John Follett. That's JonFollett. Our guest this episode is Noam Brown, who you can follow on Twitter at Polynomial. That's PolyNoamial. Tweet to us with questions, comments, topics, guest suggestions, and include the hashtag CreativeNext. And of course, the home base for everything we do is at creativenext.org. We recommend you sign up for our low-volume newsletter there. Here's a clip of what you can expect to hear next time. We'll see you then.
You know, if you're able to actually work through and interpret the different hands that these solvers are using in all these different spots, and you're able to craft these strategies, you're going to be very, very tough to beat.